It's the fourth race of the season, the first Italian Grand Prix, the first sprint race, and the first wet track of 2022. In this episode, we discuss how the sprint format differs from regular weekends, I speak a little about Parc Fermé, and we take a look at the standings so far this season. I'm Andrew Elliott, I'm here with my buddy David Proud, and I'd like to welcome you to this special sprint race edition of the Tired and Exhausted podcast. If you like what you hear, please share us with your friends and give us a rating wherever you listen. It's great to have you with us.
So this is an unusual one because it's a daytime podcast. We normally podcast the evening of, don't we? Well, we try to.
Yeah, and we're normally drinking scotch or rum or martinis or something like that. So,
but because this is before 12, we're on the hard stuff of what is your hot beverage of choice today?
I'm drinking a black coffee, an Americano, made with like a Bialetti, one of those kind of stovetop. My espresso machine's on the blink at the moment, so I just use one of those kind of stovetop espressos and tops it up with water. So,
and what's your bean of choice?
That's a good question.
Have you got many different beans?
I've got a few, and I can't remember which ones I put in the machine.
Yeah. It smells really strong. You're across the table, and I can smell that clearly.
It's from Pact. There's a coffee company called Pact.
Okay.
But I can't remember which espresso, because I've got two or three types of beans over there. They kind of send them in the post to you.
Nice.
I can't remember which one it is. It could be the fruit and nut espresso. That's okay. A regular one.
Well, that sounds quite nice. My hot beverage is Earl Grey from Fortnum & Mason's.
Nice.
Yeah, it comes in like a little individually wrapped kind of thing. So probably destroying the planet one cup of tea at a time.
That's a bit posh, Fortnum's.
Yeah, it is. I don't normally regularly get it, but I was going past there and I was like, oh, posh tea.
Nice.
So that is my hot beverage of choice for today. So I'll try and be just as witty and bantery, even though we're not on any alcohol. So what's on the agenda today?
Well, so it's the first sprint race of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a lot to say about this, but what do you think about sprint race? Not just a sprint race, but the whole weekend, because it's a completely different format, and we can go into what changes. But what do you think of it so far?
Okay, so I don't like how it affects the weekend because qualifying's early. I'm not a huge fan, but then you kind of look at what happened this weekend, and McLaren picked up some good points from it. Magnussen picked up points. And you think, for some of those middle kind of drivers in the table and the standings, it's a good opportunity to bag some points. And it could be the difference. It could make all the difference to those teams just to get those extra points. Like Lando walked away with 19 points this weekend. So my gut instinct is to hate them. And I also think it's really unfair because of how the cost cap comes in. The fact that there's significantly more risk with them doing sprint races. So I think there should be some kind of allowance made so that on the weekends they do sprint races, they're allowed to repair the car a little bit more because there's just more risk. My gut instinct is to hate them, but then allowing the drivers to earn more points, it's probably a good thing. I don't know, I'm really torn on it. How about you?
I'm not against sprint races in general at all. I just don't think the format has been thought through. I don't think it's been thought through well at all. I mean, so let's just go through, I'm just going to quickly kind of run through, you know, the differences and what changes. So there are three sprint races. There were three last season, there are going to be three this season, Austria, Brazil, and the one we just had, Imola. They're all approximately 100 kilometres, so you know, about half an hour's worth of racing. No mandatory pit stops, unlike the race, so you can just kind of, you know, use same set of tyres. They've changed the points this season, so it's the top eight receive points as opposed to last season, and it's eight for first, and seven, six, and five, and you know, down to one for eighth. And the obviously, as of last season, the finishing order defines defines the grid. It's not pole position this season. You know, so last
they got confused, didn't they, well, last season, because they said he's on pole.
Well, yeah. But... So last season on the sprint races, you'd have the qualifying race. And then they say, oh, yeah, Lewis Hamilton's on pole or Max Verstappen is on pole. And then they were corrected, saying, no, they're not on pole. They're only on pole if they win the sprint race. And this...
it's like pre-pole.
Yeah, this season they've changed it around so that if you come top of qualifying, you are in pole position, but then you might not start at the front of the race.
What? That's even worse.
I mean, there are clearly two poles. You've got sprint pole and race pole. Why they can't both be? You know, you're either on you're in pole position for the sprint race, or you're on pole position for the race. See, and they're both pole positions.
Oh my God!
Why they can't work that out, I don't know.
This is what I think. This is a problem with sprint races, because isn't a sprint race just a race? Shouldn't they all be going as flat out and as fast as they can? But they don't, because they have to manage their tyres and they have to have this strategy. Like, and it just exposes the fact that in the, like you said, it, when you go to qualifying, you'll never see the cars go faster than in qualifying. Why? They should be going as fast as they can in the race. But the way it's done, they're all managing pace, they're like backing off, they're doing, and it just exposes actually the problems in the normal race, in the fact that it's not a race, it's an endurance race more than a flat out race.
Well, that's the point I've made before, in that all races should be sprint races.
Yeah,
you know, like you say, they should be absolutely flat out all the time. Just another couple of things. Teams are allowed to spend another $150,000 per sprint.
Ah, brilliant.
If they're, you know, not given that money, but it, you know, they're allowed to spend that money. So the cost cap is increased.
That'd be great.
A sprint weekend, and also they're allowed to spend another $100,000 if they wreck the car. Okay. So if the car retires, you're allowed to spend another $100,000.
Okay, so they have brought it in. Brilliant. I mean, that would be quite nice if somebody hands them $150,000 and goes, here, hit a wall if you need to.
Yeah. The thing is, though, so do you know much about Parc Fermé?
Only the fact that once it's the cars are locked into it, that's it. There's very like they can adjust the wing height, and they can adjust the pressure in the tires, and that is literally about it, isn't it?
Well, so I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this. So there's Parc Fermé, which is French for closed park, as we all kind of probably know, and there are Parc Fermé conditions. Mm. Which is slightly different.
Right.
So Parc Fermé is literally an area, normally kind of, you know, kind of behind the podium, where all or most of the cars go at different points on the weekend. So like after the race weekend, the cars go there and they get checked and scrutinised, yeah, and they try and get their litre of fuel out and all that kind of stuff. Mm. After Quali 3, everyone who raced in Quali 3, all the cars go into Parc Fermé at that point. And that's, you know, the car's covered over, they're guarded, they're literally not allowed to do anything. There are Parc Fermé conditions, which is slightly different, which is where the cars are in the garages, but there'll be like a scrutineer there, and they're only allowed to make very, very tiny adjustments, like you say. So they're not allowed to alter the wings, but they're allowed to kind of tweak them with tools, so they can't they can't add or remove parts, but they can kind of, you know, turn it around a couple of notches to, you know, to help prevent understeer, for example. They can't really do much other than that. They can refuel under Parc Fermé conditions, they can take the tires off, they can rebalance the tires, they can check tire pressures, this kind of thing. They can kind of turn the car on and off, you know, check the battery, that kind of thing. They can, you know, remove spark plugs, you know, but that's basically
tinkering.
It's tinkering. They can't change anything. They can, if they've had an accident, they can apply for permission to change for a like for like part.
Yeah.
Like if they break, you know, part of something, part of the front wing, they can apply to, you know, to race control and say, look, we've had an accident, want to replace this part like for like, can we do that? And they'll normally say yes. If there's not enough time, what they can do is I can just do that and then ask for retroactive permission. But you know, obviously there's a risk there that that they could say no.
They'll just get a penalty point or
So they don't normally risk that unless they know it's something that the FIA would allow. Now, what's different? That's normally not an issue. You know, what happens is like after quali, you know, you've got like practice one on a Friday, practice two on a Friday, practice three on a Saturday morning, and then you've got quali. And then after you you have the three sessions where you do like your long runs, your short runs, you kind of quali set up, that kind of thing. And you work out over the course of those three practice sessions just how you want to set the car up. So, do you want to go for a car that's set up for quali or perhaps for the race? You know, because you might think, okay, well, if it's a race like Hungary or Monaco, you're probably going to set it up for quali because track position is everything. Mm. So you're not as worried about managing your tyres and that kind of stuff. You might just want to get track position. For other races, you might think, well, hang on, you know, this is an overtaking track. So I want to set my car up to be good for the long runs. And you get three sessions to do that, and then you have quali, and then you go into Parc Fermé, or if you're not in quali three, you go into Parc Fermé conditions, and then you'll be issued with like a scrutineer to make sure that they're not tinkering with the car and that kind of stuff. But that's at the end of quali three. On the sprint weekends, so you've got practice one on Friday, and then you've got qualifying. So you only really get one session, and then you get qualifying, and then it's Parc Fermé conditions from that point onwards. And then you have practice two on the Saturday morning, but you can't make any changes to the car. So you can do the runs, but you're not, if you just suddenly decide that the car's not set up correctly, you can't make any major changes before the sprint race or before the race.
So it's a total lottery then as to, you know, you've got to be really quick at making your assumptions on what's needed.
You get one practice session as opposed to three now.
That does alter it significantly, doesn't it, for the teams?
That's one of my issues. It practice two, it's obviously beneficial for drivers to perhaps learn the track if it's like a new, you know, like we're going to Miami, for example, in America. Even if there was a sprint race there, it would still be beneficial for the teams to kind of perhaps learn the track and that kind of thing. But it's not... there's not as much benefit from the practice sessions in a sprint race.
What was the other USA one we went to last year? Because I quite like that. They put all the American flag colours all the way around the track.
Oh, the American Grand Prix are always a fantastic spectacle.
Yeah.
They're really, really good. So that's one of the things I don't like about the sprint weekend, is that they haven't really thought it, through. Another thing is, you made the point that every race should be a sprint, and it should. I don't even think the sprint races are sprints, because then hear me out.
Right, okay.
If you're having to manage your tyres, which they are, sometimes they're on like tyres that are, it might be like say 30 laps or 25 laps or whatever, but the tyres are only really good for like 15 or 17. They'll be thinking, right, okay, we're going to go on the softer compound tyres now. We'll get track position is everything on this, and we'll just have to manage the tyres throughout the latter end of the sprint race. And you get teams doing that. So even the sprint races aren't really sprint races because they're still managing your tyres. If you're having to manage your tyres,
it's not a sprint race. Yeah, no,
it's a shorter race. It, just because there are no pit stops doesn't mean that it's a sprint race.
I just don't think all the kinks have been ironed out.
Do you know what I think the issue is? I think where this comes from is a lack of refueling. Because when fuel is heavy.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the days when you could refuel, you would never have a car that would fill up to the brim with, you know, like the 100 kilos or 110 kilos of fuel or whatever they have
to
now.
To get all the way to the end.
Because it'd just be too heavy. So it made much more sense to refuel for a certain number of laps, and then perhaps have like a pit stop in the middle, and then change tyres, and then go for the rest of the race. That would be the most efficient, the quickest way of doing it. Or sometimes you have like a couple of pit stops, you have like one major pit stop, and you have like a splash and dash at the end where you just kind of stick in a tiny bit of fuel for a few laps and then and then go around again. That would always be the most, you know, the quickest and the most efficient way to do it. Now, there's no way that the cars can run out of fuel. So the only way they can engineer kind of pit stops
is to
make the tyres rubbish.
Yeah.
And as soon as you make the tyres rubbish, you're gonna force the teams to manage the tyres. And as soon as they're managing the tyres, they're not really racing.
I miss seeing the refueling. I really do.
Yeah, I think it added something extra.
Yeah.
Because they could, if they brought back refueling, they could make the tyres better.
Just from an engineering point of view, it was phenomenal to see them deliver that much fuel so quickly. It was just like k-dunk, k-dunk, done.
Yeah, sort of, you know, 5 or 6 seconds, and they've stuck in,
yeah,
you know, 30 or 40 liters of fuel. It's incredible.
And it added an extra technical element to the pit team, and
qualifying, you know, you'd start the race with the fuel that you qualified in. So you could, you know, another kind of added tactic could be, you know, let's qualify with a really tiny amount of fuel, but then we're going to be forced to pit stop after like 5 laps. Or do we have a heavy car and perhaps, you know, don't qualify as well, but we will go like for a long first stint. Yeah. So it was, you know, there were all sorts of different things you could do. I mean, you don't necessarily have to bring that back, but I think if they brought back refueling, they could make the tyres a bit better, and then teams would be flat out like they were, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think it does diminish it when, you know, you've got a car that's literally done 10 laps and they're on the radio complaining about their tyres already. And, you know, they're on the back of somebody, but they're being told, oh, no, you know, back off.
Well, when they're really hammering it in qualifying, a lot of the times the tyres only last one lap. So there'll be, and sometimes it's not even one lap. I remember last season a couple of times. One of the reasons that Hamilton was particularly good was that he had a little bit of patience in earlier on in the laps, so that he would often get the fastest second and third sector, whereas Bottas would perhaps beat him in sector one. But he'd wear out his tyres by 2/3 into the lap. So you're almost having to manage your tyres over the course of a single lap. You know, it gets a bit silly at that point.
I suppose it's hard though, because they want to engineer certain things that encourage, you know, racing and different bits, but you can over-regulate it, and then all people are doing is just trying to manage the, you know, the regulations and what they need to do, rather than you see a car in front of you and you absolutely put your foot down and...
Yeah, they're not really thinking through what they're incentivizing and decentivising.
You can understand if it's something that's brought in for safety. Okay, completely get that. And that shouldn't be compromised at all. But when you're putting regulations in for anything else...
But how safe does it need to be, though? Mm. Fueling and refueling was taken away because of safety. Because, you know, I remember Massa's car caught fire.
They were rare, weren't they?
But the excuse was, this could potentially be dangerous, so we're going to take it away. You know, if safety was everything, they'd be racing on simulators and computer games.
This is true.
So yeah. there's always a line. Where is the line? Where is the safety line? That's the question. I think if they brought back refueling, that could make it a bit more exciting, because they could make the tyres better then. Or bring back Tyre Wars. Remember when there were like different brands of tyres? And at that point, you know, the tyre manufacturers are literally trying to make the best tyres they can.
Well, that would be then exactly the same with the power units.
Hmm.
You know, and that makes a huge difference.
Of course it does.
I mean, so let's talk about, you mentioned him, let's talk about Hamilton. Because talk about engine units and cars that are struggling, and it's quite disheartening for him to say that he's not fighting for a championship this weekend. I think he's probably being very realistic.
Verstappen said something similar a weekend or so ago. He said, look, you know, realistically, not sure whether the championship is on the cards now. You know, it's because he was I mean, he's not so bad now, but he was 40 points behind after like three races.
Yeah.
So I think they're just being realistic. I don't think they're saying that they won't be fighting for wins later on in the season. And obviously Verstappen's, you know, won a couple of times already. But you know, you've got to be realistic. If cars or teams make, you know, huge strides early on, it can take a lot to catch up.
But what happened to Hamilton? Because Russell, you know, did okay. But Hamilton's car just seemed, it was painful to watch how much he was porpoising.
I think Russell's porpoising just as much. The as we said in the previous episode, the Mercedes porpoises at a lower speed. So whereas it takes quite a speed for the Ferraris to porpoise, and as soon as they kind of lift off the gas, get on the brakes and drive around the corners, they've stopped and they've got downforce again and they're a bit smoother. With the Mercedes, it's not the case. They can lift off the gas and they're still porpoising. So it's a really difficult car to drive.
So as I was saying to you, just after the race, how much leeway has Mercedes got before they lose Hamilton? Because he goes, he doesn't need to be there. He wants to be there. He wants that next title.
I can't see him leaving anywhere mid-season. No. I think he's too honourable to do that.
Yeah.
He's probably got all the top drivers have clauses in. Whereas if the car is rubbish, they can exit their contract. Yeah. So if he, let's say he doesn't win a race all season, or doesn't get a podium, he could go to another team. You know, he's one of the older drivers, but he's still at absolute peak fitness.
Yeah, if he's still got Alonso.
yeah, for sure. Well, again, the same with Alonso. Alonso's still, you know, an amazing driver.
Yeah.
So yeah, he could go to another team if they don't appear to be making any improvements at all. Because what Mercedes need to show is that they can, okay, the car's not great, but we're making improvements and we're making strides. And even if they're out of the championship for this season, if they can show themselves getting better and better and better,
yeah, give a hope for next season,
because there aren't many, you know, there aren't going to be many differences between the cars between this season and next season. If they start, you know, getting podiums, winning races, and being competitive again, it's going to look good for next season.
But if they don't, because it's almost like for Hamilton, it's getting worse.
I don't know if it's getting worse. It does depend on the track. I mean, what was interesting, so we had the first wet track of this season, and cars always behave differently, and you can just imagine Mercedes and Red Bull hoping that the Ferrari was going to be rubbish in the wet, because you get some cars that are amazing in the dry. As soon as you get a wet track, they're all over the place. The Ferrari seemed amazing.
They did. Apart from one of them, let's talk about that just briefly, because Sainz is not having good luck, is he?
He binned it in, when was it?
Practice two?
Quali two, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in one of them. And that was quite a significant crash. He said that hurt. So, I mean, fair play to him to carry on for the rest of the weekend. But, Ricardo.
Yeah, it was in quali two. He lost the rear of the car. Because the curbs were really slippy. There were a few. So I mean, in Q1, I mean, Latifi binned it again.
Has Ricardo become the new Latifi? Because it's like he's just a little bit of a moving bollard, isn't he?
He binned it on an outlap.
Yeah.
So he wasn't even. on a fast lap, but he managed to bin it. Albon had an issue with his brakes, but not the same, because the Williams had issues in testing with brakes, but it's apparently a different issue this time. What I did think was amazing was in Q3, Magnussen had a really, really good save. So he kind of touched the white line, lost it. And managed to kind of to get it back. He drifted into the gravel, let the gravel slow the car down so he didn't hit the wall, and at exactly the right point, kind of kept the throttle going so as to stop it from beaching, and it managed to kind of drive away. I thought that was really, really good. Really, really
good. There was a couple of really good saves. I don't know who it was. One car kind of launched over the, in the race, launched over grass, then gravel, then grass again. And we were watching it going, how have they managed to hold that? It was amazing.
That, like, was Perez, I think.
Yeah, it just, I mean, how he managed to
hold
it. And
he did lucky not to hit anything, or not spin, to hit a sausage curb. Or
he just went absolute dead straight. I mean, the car got air as well. It was flying over the, so yeah, there's a couple of really good saves. Also, Tsunoda's amazing performance. There was a pass he did during the race that was just absolutely world class. It was really...
Yeah, he did a couple.
Yeah, very controlled, you know, measured. It's nice to actually see some of his flair coming through. I think he's probably... Because it's fair to say last season he didn't have confidence. When he was re-signed, they were like... I think he said something along the lines of, I don't know why they're inviting me back. So it was actually really quite nice to see.
Yeah, he had moments last season, but not that many. And it's good to. I think he had more early on, and then towards the end of the season, he didn't. You know, he was a little bit more inconsistent. But yeah, it's great to see him. I mean, there were some ballsy moves that he did.
But it's nice as well if a team can see the potential in somebody, even if they can't see it in themselves.
Yeah.
To go, no, he just needs a bit of time to bed in. He needs to find his feet. But yeah, I was really impressed with his driving.
I mean, just going back to the wet tracks, so the Mercedes were, they were pretty awful. In the wet, they couldn't get the heat into the tyre, into the intermediate tyres. So back in P2, when it was dry, they were quick again. I say again, you know, they were towards the top of the tables because they could get heat into the tyres. But of course, it kind of, you know, it started raining again, and the race was mostly wet. By that point, even if it was dry, they couldn't change the setup because they'd be in park firmy conditions from the day before.
Yeah. So they're done.
So that, yeah, they were kind of stuffed. But yeah, the Mercedes, it looked like they were rubbish in P1 and qualifying, but they were pretty fast in P2. Not so much in the sprint.
Well, Russell as well, in the actual race, they were going to tweak his, I think, front wing, and they didn't do it. So he had understeer for most of, like, well, I'd say like 50% of that race, and he still did really well.
Yeah, Russell. So he had a great start. And with all the kerfuffle that happened in the beginning. That's with Ricardo and Sainz.
Kerfuffle, I like that.
He I think he gained like five positions.
Yeah.
Whereas Hamilton had a poor start and lost.
It just got worse.
And then Hamilton had he got knocked by Ocon. I mean, that was a really unsafe release in the pit stop. And he lost out a couple of positions because of that. And then couldn't recover. So Russell. I mean, it appeared that he had a phenomenal race compared to Hamilton, but he basically had a couple of bits of good luck, and Hamilton had a couple of bits of bad luck.
Yeah.
What about Ricciardo?
Okay, so I always have to, like, Daniel Ricciardo. I think he's so fun. Oh, he just needs to. Well, he said that it was the curb that kind of shoved him slightly.
Not on the day. He said I was pushed into Sainz.
But he since said it was the curb. In fairness to the guy, he went to find Sainz in the Ferrari, like their kind of main bit, to apologise to him in person. That's nice. And even Sainz said, oh, you know, that's a really gentlemanly thing to do.
Oh, I don't have stuff against him as a person. I just think as a driver, he's just, I don't know. He just seems nowhere. He seemed nowhere last season. You know, he had a reasonable season with Renault. In the last season, it wasn't too bad. Managed to get he got a couple of podiums on a not an amazing car. comes along to McLaren, gets absolutely outclassed by Lando Norris.
Yeah.
And even when he won a race, he still didn't. You know, I thought that would reinvigorate him, but he just switched off again. This season, he's just getting. I don't know. He seems to be making silly errors. You know,
yeah. The thing is, he's got a car that. I mean, look at the sprint race. They were like.
It's one of the only cars, if not the only car, that doesn't really porpoise. You know, it's not the quickest car, but it's not porpoising. So it's probably easier to drive than all the other cars on the grid.
Yeah.
All he did was he didn't seem to have any patience at all. And he was trying to make a move that wasn't going to be there. I mean, I agree it was kind of a racing incident because they basically all are at the beginning of the race, you know, the first lap, certainly the first couple of corners. But it was a wet race and he went across the curb, lost it and went smacking into Sainz. And then was nowhere for the entire race after that.
I mean, it matters though, because we'll get to the standings in a bit. And it really does matter when you've got one driver who is, you know, so far off the pace of the other driver in terms of points. It just, you need them to be pretty much like one in front of the other, wherever that is on the grid. Like, you know, you would expect like Red Bull getting a 1-2 or Ferrari getting, you know, a 2-3. You kind of want both of your cars like side by side on the grid, side by side, you know, in finishing.
Yeah,
you don't want one.
You need a wingman.
Yeah.
Because Hamilton had that issue in 2008 with Heikki Kovalainen as a team. And Heikki Kovalainen wasn't a terrible driver. You know, he did win Grand Prix when when Hamilton wasn't there to pick up the wins. But a lot of the time he was just that little bit too far down the grid and couldn't really, you know, if you've got like a really top driver that's in, and it could be either or, you know, you could have two amazing drivers. I mean, McLaren had that afterwards with Button and Hamilton. Two top drivers. But whoever is in front, you want the guy behind to protect them.
Well, yeah. And
you can't do that if they're like, you know, three or four positions back.
Yeah, there's you know, even more recent. Perez defending, brilliant example. You know, Bottas was a really good, like, wingman for Hamilton. You know, he was consistently up there. So it does make a huge difference. I think just going back to McLaren, it's like, Norris just hasn't got that wingman at the moment. I'm really hoping that Daniel can find it, but
it's been over a season now though, and he doesn't seem to. I don't know. He doesn't really.
He was all right in the sprint race, you know. Result in that, the result he's in the last Grand Prix.
Yeah, he's inconsistent.
That's the thing.
It needs to be like that all the time.
So we know he can do it. It's just, can he do it week in, week out?
Speaking of inconsistencies, spectacular return to form by Charles Leclerc with his unenforced error.
Yes. Well, this is what we're talking about, because there's good drivers, there's great drivers, and then there's championship drivers. Now, I think we all could spot... You wouldn't be in Formula 1 unless you're a good driver. Well, or unless your dad sponsors your seat and you're Russian. But now he's gone. Then there's great drivers that are in like the top 10. You know, Bottas, I think, is proving that he is a great driver. But then there's championship winning drivers. And in order to do that, you have to hold your nerve. There's going to be crunch times. And actually, arguably, we still don't know if Verstappen's got that. Because he bottled it quite a bit last season.
Yeah, he certainly didn't have it last season, because there were opportunities where he could have sewn up the season.
Yeah.
And he didn't, and it had to go down to the race control inventing the rules 10 laps before the end to engineer an overtake.
I think that now he's got one. I think he has got it. I just don't think we've seen it. He can be quite I don't know, aggressive. I think he can make quite snap decisions. You know, he just needs to mature a little bit, I think.
It's not really the aggression that I take issue with. It's the decision making.
Yeah.
You know, like he's
not quite where it needs to be.
He tends to make decisions that aren't even good for himself. Yeah. Like when there are a couple of, like when he'll overtake at the earliest possible moment. And he did that a couple of times to Leclerc, who would make sure that he was in the DRS zone the next time and take the position back. So it's stuff like that where he just needs to, you know, to think ahead perhaps a little bit more. Like letting Hamilton go on COPS last season. I keep coming back to that.
But if he'd have done that, he'd have
had the championship a lot earlier.
So talking about Leclerc, it's unforced errors does not a champion make.
Not unless they're in. I still think Leclerc could do it with the champion because he's in such an amazing car. But the difference is when you're.
But we're now asking that question of him, and it's not been asked any time before.
He's not been in this position any time before. He's always made unenforced errors.
Yeah.
You know, throughout, even when he was blisteringly quick a couple of years ago in the Ferrari, when the Ferrari was kind of breaking the engine rules and was amazingly fast. He was still making the odd unenforced error. He wasn't amazingly consistent.
See, I think Norris has got it. I truly believe Norris has got that championship.
He seems much more consistent.
Yeah. He holds his nerve. How many times, like, did he just tell his, you know, radio team, like, shut up and let me drive?
Yeah, he could have won a race if he'd listened to his race engineers on that one,
but
yeah.
There's other times where he's been really under the cosh. Somebody's gaining on him and they're like, you just, you know, just need to hold him off for like four or five laps. And he did. He's got that. There's just something in Norris that he can seem to switch off the world and just do what he needs to do. Hamilton's the same. You know, he can just go, right, that's it. Laser focus. Just get the job done. I see that in Verstappen, like in different races. But
yeah, I think Verstappen tends to see the red mist a little bit.
That's the thing, and I think that if he can not do that and just do the other thing, which is a laser focus, I think, yeah. But it's the first time we're asking these questions of Leclerc. It would be the first time we're asking that question of Sainz if he hadn't been so unlucky.
I mean, it was partially. I say not partially his fault, but you know, if he hadn't crashed in qualifying, he'd have got a better position.
Yeah,
and then you know, and then the sprint would have turned out a bit differently, and then potentially the race could have done as well. It's difficult to know what would have happened.
Yeah, we've never asked that question of Russell either, and that's the thing. I think we're getting to that point where certain drivers will be able to test them and ask that question of, have you got what it takes? Because if they're in a championship-winning car,
I mean, Russell has been amazing.
Yeah, really, you know, has.
Because he's not in a particularly fast car, and
he's just in a faster car than last year.
Yes, but he's, you know, he's.
Should we talk about standings then?
Because yeah, think let's it's, go. Let's.
Right, okay, let's boot up the app. Da-da-da-da. Okay, my phone is not recognizing my face, which is always fun. Right, so we'll do drivers first. Right, okay, so it's Charles Leclerc, Max Verstappen, Perez, Russell, Sainz, Norris, then Hamilton, then Bottas. And what's really interesting about that is that Valtteri Bottas is within 4 points of Hamilton.
Sure.
That's, I mean, Hamilton in seventh, you can see why he's saying, well, that's my season over. Norris is doing well in sixth. Sainz, I think, is unlucky to be in fifth. I think he's had a
he's had more bad luck than he deserves, for sure.
But then look, Russell's in fourth.
See, Russell's done really, really well. And he wasn't Russell in, I mean, before this race, Russell was in second or third, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's got 49 points. Leclerc's got 86. So he's not, I mean, anything could happen, but you know, if Russell started getting race wins, you know, is in that top four.
Yeah, I don't think that's about to happen.
No, I don't think anytime soon. I think
soon.
The Ferraris would have to slip so far off the grid. But I mean, to be in that top four in that car.
Yeah, it's outstanding, and he has had a bit of luck, but he's also made no unenforced errors. He's squeezed absolutely everything out of that car.
I mean, and then look at Daniel Ricciardo, who's all the way down in 11th.
I mean, yeah, Ricciardo's just
guess who's at the bottom? Nowhere.
Schumacher.
Oh, actually, no. There's only three drivers that haven't scored any points, which are.
Has Schumacher scored a point?
Nope.
So he's one of them. Latifi. Yeah.
Latifi's definitely down there, and Hülkenberg.
Oh yeah, but he was a reserve driver, wasn't he? He's not a. You can't hold that against him.
But weirdly, right on the app, they've put Hülkenberg above Latifi. They put Latifi in 21st.
Is that because Hülkenberg has probably, although he hasn't got points, he's probably got a higher position in a race than Latifi, who is just crashing all over the place at the moment.
Yeah, that's quite funny. Right, so let's do constructors. Unless do you want to know any points difference? Because
give us the points of honour. So the top five or six.
Charles Leclerc is 86 points. Max Verstappen is 59 points. So that's closed considerably.
Yeah, but he's still like a race win ahead. Yeah. After four races, so it's...
Yeah, and also it's Verstappen having that did not finish is not great. So Max Verstappen to Sergio Perez is 50, Max Verstappen's on 59, Perez is on 54.
Close.
Yep, and then Perez to Russell is 54-49. Close. And then Carlos Sainz, there's a bit of a drop from 49, Russell in 49 to signs in 38. That is a bit of a drop. So you can kind of see that.
I mean, Leclerc is still.
Oh, yeah. He's,
you know, he's zooming ahead, even though he didn't have the best weekend this time.
But then that 2-3-4, very tight grouping. And then from Carlos Sainz to Lando Norris is just 3 points. So, and then Hamilton at 28. So you'd probably group that because it's within 10. So there's a little grouping between 2-3-4 and then 5-6-7. That's quite...
How are the constructors doing?
Okay, so constructors.
Because Mercedes were second, weren't they?
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Okay, I'm going to frame this slightly differently. It goes Ferrari, Red Bull, Mercedes, Lando Norris, Alfa Romeo. Because he's doing it on his own. I'm sorry, he really is.
So what are the points?
So Ferrari's at 124. Actually, it's closer in constructors between Ferrari and Red Bull because Red Bull's at 113. So that's 124 to 113. That's tight.
Well, yeah, that's because Perez and Verstappen are close, whereas Sainz and Leclerc are not.
Yeah. And also we had a couple of did not finishes. So, yeah. And then Mercedes is third with 77. With McLaren in fourth at 46. So there's a huge drop off there. That's not even close. And then it's Alpha. Then it's Alpine, AlphaTauri, and then Haas at 15. Haas, do you know what? Considering how good they're doing, I don't think that is an accurate representation of Haas to be in eighth. And Aston Martin got their first points this weekend, didn't they? So they've jumped above Williams. I mean, Williams have got Latifi and Albon. Albon's all right, but Latifi. Like.
Yeah, Albon's not amazing, but he's not terrible. Latifi is just crashing all the time at the moment, and I'm not sure how long. You talk about, you know, how long the Mercedes have to prove themselves to Hamilton. I think Latifi needs to prove himself to Williams before he gets ousted, and they bring
anybody or like you or me.
Yeah, or Mazepin. Or
I could consistently crash a car every weekend.
I'd be cheaper than Latifi, I think, even if I didn't race.
Yeah.
He's got to be costing them money at the moment, regardless of how much
even
he's
if you
in.
Just lightly touch a wall, you know, you'd be doing less damage. I tell you, the one that I really, really like in this is Alpha being in fifth. They're doing really well.
They are. It's nice to see... it's nice to see Bottas kind of, you know, alongside Hamilton and Russell.
Yeah.
Speaking of Russell again, there was some great racing between Russell and Magnussen in the race, I thought.
I mean, that is one thing. I mean, I know we've got porpoising and stuff, but that ground effect.
The tailgating, the ability to stay behind lap after lap after lap is fantastic.
So close, within inches.
Yeah. I mean, look at Hamilton when he was behind, was it Gasly? You know, for lap after lap after lap. And the DRS just wasn't, you know, I mean, it wasn't enabled for like what seemed to be half the race. And then after that, there was just a DRS train. So, so Gasly had DRS as well. So Hamilton couldn't get past. But he was right behind him, lap after lap after lap, and his tyres weren't.
Yeah, I'm loving that, you know, how close, because it's nail biting when you're watching it. So here goes my. I'm not one hugely into gambling at all. But I would like to do a wager for a bar of Dairy Milk whole nut.
Okay.
If you will take this wager, that Lando Norris will get his first win this season. If he doesn't, you get the whole nut. If he does, I get the whole nut. And then...
Because I think he will, though, so...
Oh, okay. So I'll go for an accumulator bet.
I think Lando Norris is likely to win a race this season.
I'll go for an accumulator bet that Bottas also does.
I'll take that bet. I don't think Bottas. And it's nothing about Bottas. I just don't think the Alpha is there.
Right.
The McLaren is not porpoising, and all they need to do is make it a little bit faster, and Norris has got to win.
So you need an equivalent accumulator bet. So mine is... a P1 for Lando and a P1 for Bottas, and then I get a nice bar of Dairy Milk.
Oh, blimey.
And I'm not into gambling at all, but that's why we're doing it
for chocolate. What could I... I'll tell you what, I'll have a think, by the next episode.
Yeah. Actually, so that it doesn't... you need to tell me off podcast before wheels turn.
Before the next race, yeah, sure, okay.
And we'll write it down and declare it. Because, yeah, if not, you're another racer.
Because I need to think of something that I think is going to happen, but you're going to be willing to bet
against
me.
See, I have a suspicion Lando will get P1 and Bottas might sneak a podium. But I'm willing to go put my big boy pants on.
I think a podium is reasonably likely. I don't think the Alpha is quite race winning yet.
Imagine if this happens.
It would be amazing. It would be absolutely amazing to see.
I will jump out of my wheelchair. Mind you, imagine if Bottas does that and then Lando doesn't get it. I'll be absolutely gutted. But I think Lando's going to get his first P1 this season. I think he's got the car for it. And he did such a consistently good race. It was just... Well, we didn't see him because he was just pootling around in fourth, wasn't he? He was just getting the job done. And then Leclerc goes and tries to gamble for like an extra point spoons it.
And to give Verstappen his due as well, again, we didn't really see much of him. He just did absolutely everything he needed to, just was straight out in front.
Yeah.
And then just kept it there, managed his tyres perfectly. Absolutely flawless race. Well done to Verstappen in not easy conditions.
So that's my that was my little wager that I had. So hopefully, come on, Lando.
Okay, well we'll see. It's America next time, so it'll be a nice evening race.
Yes, in Miami, and we'll actually be able to watch it because last time I was in Scotland.
Yeah, you keep going away.
Yeah. I'm not due to be away, so I can watch this one, and we'll. I doubt we'll podcast straight after because
it'll be like 10 o'clock at night when it finishes. So,
be the next night and back to probably having some alcoholic beverage of your choice this time.
Sounds good. Right, we'll see you again after Miami.
Yeah.